Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. At cineplexes around the country this summer, a lot of people are walking past the booms and screams of Jurassic World and Mission Impossible and settling in with their popcorn to watch documentaries. Yes, documentaries. Kinder, gentler, true stories. About Mr. Rogers, about a Supreme Court justice, if you can believe it, and more. Audiences are loving them, and they're setting new records. This hour on Point, documentaries, the hit of the summer. You can join us on air or online. Have you seen these movies? RBG, Won't You Be My Neighbor? Whitney, and Three Identical Strangers. What drew you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook, where they're at On Point Radio. In a few minutes, we'll speak to a director and an executive producer of two of this summer's biggest hits. But let's kick it off here first with Ann Thompson, editor-at-large at the online journal IndieWire.com, founder of the column Thompson on Hollywood. She joins me now from NPR West in Culver City, California. Ann, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Good day.
So, an unlikely star of the cinema this summer, the documentary film. Who'd have thunk it, huh? Give us the numbers. How are these documentaries doing?
Well, Won't You Be My Neighbor, which is Morgan Neville's Fred Rogers documentary, which launched at Sundance to weepy audiences, has just been cleaning up. It's at $20 million.
Wow.
Which, you know, rivals the heyday of Michael Moore. I mean, he could be passing some of those records soon.
So they're doing really well playing in vastly fewer theaters. That's the secret here. I mean, fewer theaters than the average summer blockbuster. I think Won't You Be My Neighbor is in less than 900 theaters. Put that into perspective for us.
That's a lot for an independent film. So this is Focus Features, the specialty division of Universal. And, you know, these are platform releases. They go into New York, L.A., they get some reviews, then they go to Boston, then they go to Chicago. You know, they roll out over time. And so this is an extraordinary hit to be in that many theaters. If you're talking about a big Jurassic World kind of movie, you're in, you know, 4,000 screens or something.
And incredible reviews. Rotten Tomatoes scores well over 90%. Won't You Be My Neighbor got an astounding 99% from moviegoers.
It's critics who love it, too. I mean, but word of mouth drives these things. So if I say, my daughter and I, you know, we couldn't stop crying, and here's what made us cry. It was that moment when they signed PBS into being, and then Fred Rogers was pleading with the evil senators to save NPR, you know, not NPR, but, you know, PBS. And then they did, because he convinced them. It's something really basic. People are weeping at the goodness of a human being who turns out to be good.
Yeah. So what makes a documentary a success in theaters? Can you put your finger on it, especially these documentaries this summer?
I think what's happening, I mean, if you look at the art house audience, it's often older people. It's often liberal people. It's people who want to be in a collective experience with a group. And I think both RBG, which is the other one, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG, celebrating the 85-year-old Supreme Court justice who's, you know, survived two bouts of cancer and so forth. Everybody's in there together cheering on these heroes. Mm-hmm. That's what they want.
RBG has pulled in more than $13 million since its release in May. Here is a moment from the trailer where some of her many fans gush about how a diminutive 85-year-old judge became a hero to young and old in this country.
She's become such an icon.
Would you mind signing this copy?
I am 84 years old, and everyone wants to take a picture with me.
Notorious RBG.
Yeah, yeah.
When you come right down to it, the closest thing to a superhero I know.
What is it about this movie, RBG, Ann Thompson?
You know what? They're selling T-shirts. Diva. They're shelling. Someone put up their exercise socks with RBG. You know, working out with her dumbbells.
Right.
She's an inspiration to us all. It's about celebrating people who are doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. Finally, in an era, unfortunately, when many people, including our president, are not, and a lot of people are disturbed by that.
So these documentaries are doing well in a summer. You could argue the reason why they're doing so well, but they're certainly in a different mold than successful documentaries of the past. I'm thinking of Inconvenient Truth, Fahrenheit 9/11, Bowling for Columbine. I mean, these are a more genteel alternative to traditional popcorn fare. That's for sure, Ann Thompson.
Yes, they're not overtly political, but I would say that they're feeding something basic that has been churned up by our political climate, if that makes any sense.
So here's
But there are other documentaries doing well, too. I mean, Three Identical Strangers has nothing to do with politics, except that they explore why these three kids were separated, these babies were separated in the first place, how they found each other, and then how they found out how they were separated. And there's a dark story there.
I'll play a clip from that movie, Three Identical Strangers. Here's Bobby Shaffrin describing what it was like to discover in college that he had a brother, an identical triplet named Eddie. Here is Bobby and the friend who brought them together talking about the day that they met.
I wouldn't believe the story if someone else were telling it, but it's true, every word of it. It started when I went to college. It was the first day of school. All these people are coming up to me saying, Eddie, how are you? Eddie, hi. I'm like, my name's not Eddie. I don't know what you're talking about.
As soon as this guy turned around, I knew it was Eddie's double. I said, you're not going to believe this. You have a twin brother.
Yeah, a twin brother, a third one named David. I mean, this story, this movie, I mean, people were on the edge of their seats in the theater where I was, Ann Thompson.
Well, it's structured like a thriller.
Right.
And part of what we're talking about, too, is that the way that documentary movies have evolved over the years, and Michael Moore certainly led the charge, there's much more narrative tropes, more thrills, more structured withholding of information. You know, it becomes like a thriller, this movie.
I'm seeing stories, reporters saying that parents are sending their kids off to see the latest blockbuster, and then they're going to see the documentaries in the theater next door. Though I have to say, we took our kids to see these movies, too, because, we wanted them to have that experience. But it's an interesting phenomenon that's going on in some places, Anne.
Well, the other thing is that the Netflix of the world, it used to be back in the day that you had PBS, you had HBO, it was all very granola, it was all very good for you. And now you have this exploding atmosphere. You have A&E and CNN, which made RBG and Three Identical Strangers. You have ESPN, which made the Oscar winner a few years ago, O.J. Made in America. You've got Showtime, you've got Nat Geo, which made the Jane Goodall documentary, another feel-good documentary celebrating a hero, Jane Goodall. And then Netflix is just churning them out, too, even if they don't all, hit theaters. So we're in a new golden age, if you like. They talk about television. Well, television fuels a lot of these documentaries that do have a theatrical life.
Here's a clip from Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor? Fred Rogers explaining here why he asked children that question, Won't You Be My Neighbor? On every episode of his show.
Won't you be my neighbor? Well, I suppose it's an invitation. It's an invitation for somebody to be close to you. The greatest thing that we can do is to help somebody know that they're loved and capable of loving.
The music in the background, it's that hopeful, sort of inspiring tone that you felt throughout that movie, Anne.
You got me going again.
I got a lot of callers on my board. Let me get first in here. Charleston, South Carolina, Kane is on the line. Hi, Kane. Welcome to the program.
She's right. She got me going again.
What did you think? You saw Won't You Be My Neighbor, Kane? You loved it, yeah?
Yes, I loved it. And a friend of mine took me. It wasn't even my idea. And I kind of always thought that it was an act with Mr. Rogers, and I hate to sound insensitive, but I always thought he was a little creepy. And then I saw this movie, and man, my whole paradigm shifted. He is truly a nice person, just good through and through. And the other thing I really liked about him is he tackled issues, everything from racism, the gay issue, things like that, in very, very gentle, subtle ways.
Gentle ways, subtle ways that children could relate to, Ann Thompson. You saw that throughout this movie over and over again.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people thought, as she said, that maybe he was a little creepy. Maybe there was going to be a reveal, you know, something awful in his past. And I hate to be giving out a spoiler for those of you who haven't seen it, but it turns out he's really as nice, if not nicer, than we thought. Even breaking, boundaries in terms of child psychology and figuring out how to reach children and how to really engage them. You learn a lot about him in this movie.
Let me go to Essex Junction, Vermont. Helen is on the line. Hi, Helen. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks. Uh-huh. I just was calling because I think people might not think to bring kids to these movies, but my daughter, for her 11th birthday, chose to go see RBG, and she loved it. Mm. And she actually took a friend a month later, when it was still playing in town, she said, oh, my friend Maddie would love this. We got to go.
And what was it about it that she really enjoyed? What did she love?
I think it's just a girl power movie. Mm. And
definitely.
You know, you come out of there feeling, at least I come out feeling like, oh, my gosh, I have done nothing with my life. But, you know, for a kid, it's very inspiring. Mm.
Helen, thank you. Ann Thompson, I do think that that's a good word, inspiring.
Absolutely. And I would add Jane to that list, which is on Nat Geo and is up for an Emmy. That's the kind of movie that girls should see as well.
We're talking about all these hit summer documentaries playing in packed theaters, and you can join the conversation. What do you think? A documentary about Mr. Rogers and his neighborhood is drawing crowds. Why do you think it's such a hit? What is it about Justice Ginsburg's story that's generating all that buzz? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. Documentaries are big in movie theaters this summer. Have you seen any of them? How are they stacking up against the fear of superheroes, car crashes, and armed muscle men dangling from helicopters? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Here are a couple of clips. The first one from Won't You Be My Neighbor? Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood's last producer, Margie Whitner, talks about how that show broke a lot of rules of television, and yet it was a huge hit.
We had a director that once said to me, you take all of the elements that make good television and do the exact opposite. You have Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Low production values, simple set, unlikely star. Yet, it worked. Because he was saying something really important.
And here is Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the documentary RBG, looking back to the early days of her career, a very different time in the world when seeing women and men as equal was really still an unusual idea, and how she saw her role in changing that way of thinking.
I did see myself as kind of a kindergarten teacher in those days because the judges didn't think sex discrimination existed. Well, one of the things I tried to plant in their minds was think about how you would like the world to be for your daughters and granddaughters.
Ann Thompson is my guest this hour, editor-at-large at the online journal IndieWire.com. I'd like to invite two more people into the conversation now. Joining me from New York City, Amy Antelis. She is Executive Vice President for Talent and Content Development at CNN Worldwide. She's also executive producer of two of this summer's biggest documentaries, RBG and Three Identical Strangers. She's also behind the documentary Love, Gilda, which will open in theaters on September 21st. Amy, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. Good to be here.
And joining us from Pasadena, California, award-winning documentary producer, director, and writer Morgan Neville, known for his 2013 movie 20 Feet from Stardom and many more. His latest, Won't You Be My Neighbor, is the highest-grossing biographical documentary of all time. Morgan, welcome to you. Nice to have you.
Good to speak with you.
Wow. Highest-grossing biographical documentary of all time. That must feel pretty good, huh?
It does. I wish I could say I expected it, but I didn't.
You didn't expect this, huh? You didn't expect this success.
No. And if you did, you should have your head examined, because I don't think there's anybody a year ago that would have said we'd be having this conversation today. The only thing I can say is I've been doing this long enough that, you know, you see how it goes up and down. You know, there have been waves of, you know, it's the year of the documentary, and then it recedes, and I'm just happy to have caught this wave.
So how did you decide you wanted to make a movie about Mr. Rogers, a kind, gentle, non-controversial man, a Presbyterian minister? Did you worry it would be compelling enough? I mean, what gave you this idea?
I absolutely worried. You know, how do you make a film about a character who, on the surface of things, has no dramatic tension and never changes. So, of course, those aren't true, but on, you know, that's the surface impression. But honestly, the reason I wanted to make the film was that I, for whatever reason, started watching Mr. Rogers' speeches. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks that this is a voice I don't hear in our culture today. You know, the kinds of things he was advocating for, I have been just thirsty for somebody to be talking about those things, about civility and kindness and how we should treat one another and this kind of an idea. So it was really just a feeling of wanting to spend more time with that voice and give it a platform.
We heard Mr. Rogers' last producer, Margie Whitner, there in your documentary saying, you know, this was a show that had low production values, a simple set, an unlikely star. Take all the elements that make good television and do the exact opposite. And there you have that program. So how did that play into how you produced this documentary?
Well, you know, we did put some effort and money into it this time, you know, but I think part of that is that it was about Fred and what he did. You know, it's funny that, you know, a character like all the puppets, he did the voices of all the puppets, and Daniel Tiger, his most famous puppet. When you really look at Daniel Tiger, it's a dingy sock puppet whose mouth doesn't move. But somehow it's so imbued with life. Everything about the set and the characters was just imbued with such a strong point of view and energy and life that it really doesn't matter what it looks like as long as you buy into it. And I think we all bought into it. And I think I was just trying to really channel a lot of what Fred's voice was about, which is really having a one-on-one relationship with your audience.
Amy Antelis, you're executive producer of Three Identical Strangers and RBG. Why do you think audiences have connected so much with those documentaries?
Well, I think, as Anne said earlier, this is an era when I think we're looking for some inspiration, some heroes, some hope. And I think in the case of RBG, this is a story of someone who's battled tremendous odds to achieve really the most in her field and has affected the lives of so many people. I think it's really easy to look at this movie and realize how many things that she did in her life as a lawyer really paved the way for so many things we take for granted today. So I think it's a film that exposed a side of RBG that maybe was largely unknown. How she got to the Supreme Court, that story I think was not widely told. And I think you know, laying it out in this film just made it really easy for people to understand how much impact she really has had on people's lives.
Her impact, her legal accomplishments, also her emergence as a sort of pop culture mascot is really quite extraordinary and comes out in this film in a big way, Amy.
Yes, and that I think made her quite a unique Supreme Court justice, one that made it kind of irresistible in terms of trying to tell that story. I don't know that anyone else has really had that kind of impact on popular culture. So that just gave the story, which was already very layered, it gave it yet another really sort of a really good level of entertainment, if you will.
I've got callers.
And there was a romance there, too, I would like to add.
That's true.
With her and Marty.
And Marty's
right.
Her husband.
Powerful.
Yeah.
Right. And that is an interesting element. You know, it's been wonderful to see how people have reacted to this film in so many ways. But one of, you know, there are two things that people say most after they've seen this film. I never knew about her legal career before the Supreme Court. And what an amazing love story. That piece of the film is just incredibly inspiring, given that her husband in the 1950s did something that maybe most men really would never think of doing, and that's putting himself squarely, you know, in her court in terms of – in her corner, if you will, in terms of pushing her career, stepping back so that her career could go forward. And women everywhere love that story. And, you know, he was an amazing man. And putting his story front and center, I think, was also very, very powerful.
He was her biggest advocate. I've got calls lined up around the block here. Let me get Anthony in from Ellicott City, Maryland. Hi, Anthony. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Delighted to be with you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to briefly comment about the Fred Rogers documentary. As someone who was born in the early 70s, so I'm a bona fide Gen Xer, as they say, I remember my mother turning the program on while my brother and I would have our cereal in the morning. And what was special about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was that fundamentally he spoke to truths. And those truths, which I think was well corroborated in the documentary, is that people are fundamentally good. Mm. People are also unique and valuable. And when you take a look at some of the other programs, even in those years and certainly more subsequently, that have a lot of white noise and violence and cartoon characters beating one another up, now you realize that those fundamental truths that Fred Rogers imparted to many children in my generation helped to form us, mm. I would hope, in a very positive way as we've gotten older. I became an attorney eventually. And just little vignettes from Mr. Rogers teaching us about where does milk come from and how is it processed made you understand and respect, you know, the everyday person that gets up and takes care of milk or makes pins.
Yeah, no, it's right, Anthony. It's such a great point, Morgan Neville. I mean, I remember watching Mr. Rogers myself as a little girl. I remember him teaching me to spell the word friend. I mean, everybody has their story, right, of Mr. Rogers. Let me play another clip here. This is a scene where Fred Rogers explains that his TV show was just about one thing. It was about love.
Love is at the root of everything. All learning, all parenting, all relationships.
What we see and hear on the screen is part of who we become.
Mm. Morgan Neville, that really sort of sums it up right there to the caller's
point.
It
does. Yeah. You know, based on what your caller said, you know, part of what Fred decided to do was not to help children escape from the real world, but to level with them about the difficulties of things, bad things that happen in the real world, and help them process it. And really, I think for myself, when I was making the film, but I think part of what audiences are also reacting to is the adult need to process the trauma of our world. You know, there are a lot of bad things out there in this world, and we don't spend a lot of time processing them. And I think that's what he was helping kids to do, but I think it's really what we're all craving in this day and age.
Anthony, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Tolland, Connecticut. Linda is on the line. Hi, Linda. Welcome to On Point.
Hello. Nice to be with you, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I've seen all three of the documentaries, but for me, the big part about seeing it is I was treated as an adult. I consider them adult movies. They didn't need sex. They didn't need anything like that. They all told a wonderful story. When I saw RBG, it's the only movie I've gone to when it ended, the audience started to applaud. Mm-hmm. That's a hero. And as one of your guests mentioned, I was blown away. I knew something about Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life and how she became a judge, but her life with her husband was just wonderful because it was a love story, and I think he recognized the significance of what she could do and what she could accomplish, and he let her do it at a time when most men didn't.
Right. Linda, thank you very much. Ann Thompson, I think Linda's onto something. There is a communal experience happening here. People are having an emotional experience in these movies. They're clapping at the end, as Linda mentioned. They clapped in my theater as well. People lingered. They didn't want to leave. I mean, it's really remarkable, I have to say, Ann.
Well, it's a testament to how important it is to be together, to see things not just on our computer screens or our mobile phones, but with each other. And I think people come out of those movies having experienced something together. And that's one of the reasons why they're spreading the word of mouth the way they are.
Amy Antelis, we don't watch the same news anymore. There's so much content out there. The internet is dispersing us. Is it going too far to say that this is some form of a community, a new values community that many people have found this summer in these movies?
I think that's really right on. When we started CNN Films 6 years ago, and we also started something called CNN Original Series, we had this feeling at CNN that people were consuming the news in very different ways, in very, very short takes, grazing, tasting, going from site to site, and including their television news. And I think we really landed on something back then, which was that we weren't giving our viewers at CNN anything to really chew on, any content that, to really engage them, to tell a deeper story. And we really sort of set this up as sort of the opposite of what most of CNN does, but we felt like our audience could consume all kinds of content, and we could be a place that had short takes and quick turnarounds, but we could also be a place where people settled back and really engaged in something much deeper. So I think we've seen that sort of come to fruition this summer where these films, you know, they start out theatrically for CNN, but eventually they will all be on CNN. And we think – you know, the theatrical experience is fantastic. It's communal. It does feel different to sit in a theater and experience this with other people. But in general, I think to your point about the internet, I think people need something where they can really dig in, spend time, be thoughtful, have something to talk about with their friends and loved ones. And I think that's what these films are doing for us this summer.
Morgan Neville, as I understand it, you sold this film, Won't You Be My Neighbor, sight unseen to Focus Features, which was behind movies like Brokeback Mountain, Milk, The Theory of Everything. What was their response when you approached them with this?
They were excited about it. You know, I think what they liked was from the beginning, the idea was that Fred Rogers is this unique cultural character who, because of our relationship with him, I grew up watching the show and loving the show, but it predated any sense I had of my politics or my tribe or my regionalism. So he's this rare cultural character for whom he's kind of neutral. And if you're looking at, you know, a subject for common ground, as I always am, he was kind of the perfect avatar for that. And I think the intent from the beginning was to make a film for people of every political stripe and religious stripe. And I think that was important. I mean, I think that's really kind of the purpose of what I was trying to do. And I think what a lot of these films are trying to do is not be, a polemical, but really talk about core values that I think most people would really get behind. Mm.
Another hit documentary this summer is Whitney, about the superstar singer and actress Whitney Houston. It has grossed more than $4 million internationally since its release a month ago. And I wanted to play a clip from that trailer.
I come from a family of singers.
My mom, she was a little tough on Whitney because she knew what Whitney had.
There were always a lot of secrets. When you don't resolve things and you don't deal with things, they never go.
Ann Thompson, another unexpected hit, coming in there at $4 million gross.
Yeah, Kevin MacDonald actually got the family to tell him all sorts of things, and digging into the mystery of why she was so disturbed and so unhappy and couldn't seem to be able to heal herself, he found out that she had been abused as a child, and her brother had also. So it gives a whole different dimension to what has been, you know, something of a tabloid story all these years.
We are
and
talking,
audiences are responding.
They are. And we're talking about those documentaries, why they're doing so well in movie theaters this summer. What's the message for us in these movies? We go to break with Whitney Houston's I Have Nothing, which you can also hear in the new documentary, Whitney. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
I won't hold it back again. This passion inside, can't run from myself. There's no
I'm Ann Powers from NPR Music. Last summer, we launched Turning the Tables, a project that radically changed how we talk about the history of popular music, with a list of the 150 greatest albums by women. This week, we're launching Season 2, looking at the 200 greatest songs by 21st century women. Check out who made the list and who didn't at n.pr/turningthetables.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the documentary films that are heating up the box office this summer, and you can join the conversation. Are you hungry for more of them? Is there a person, famous or not, you'd like to see profiled in a documentary? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guest this hour, Morgan Neville, whose movie Won't You Be My Neighbor has audiences weeping openly in movie theaters across this country. Amy Antelis of CNN Films, who was executive producer of the documentary RBG and Three Identical Strangers. They are selling big in movie theaters right now. And Ann Thompson, editor-at-large at IndieWire.com. I wanted to play this clip from Three Identical Strangers. Bobby and his college friend drive to Brother Eddie's house to meet up. They walk to the front door, the door opens, and these two brothers, the twins of the triplets, stare at each other in shock.
He's going, "Oh my God, I'm going, oh my God." He's going, "Holy crap, I'm going, holy crap."
They just looked at each other and they moved it. Every time Bobby moved his head, Eddie moved. And then Eddie would move and then Bobby would move. Like they were looking at a mirror. It was the weirdest thing.
It was like the world faded away and it was just me and Eddie.
Amy Antelis, this was quite a riveting film, and the twists and turns and the dark corners that we find ourselves in this movie, it's really quite something. It was a long time in the making. Tell us about it. Three networks attempted to tell the story, twice in the 80s, once in the 90s. Nobody could ever pull it off. What were the practical and the legal difficulties you overcame to make this film?
Well, I'd have to give all credit to the director, Tim Wardle, who is just a force of nature. He and his producing team and his company, Raw, pursued this project for quite a number of years. I think it took a very long time to gain the trust of all the subjects. They obviously had been through a lot of ups and downs in their lives, and I think Tim's persistence and his touch and his approach to their story, I think, won them over in the end. And then as you see and you know, when you read about what the critics say about this movie, I think Tim made, you know, a magnificent film that really did justice to all the sensitivity that surrounds this story. So it took a really long time for them to sort of gather the threads. They brought it to us several years ago. Raw had been a production partner of CNN's on other projects, and we were very excited and grateful to them that they came to us and said, you know, "Do you want to partner with us on this film?" So, but when you're dealing with individuals' life stories that are as difficult as Bobby and Eddie's and David's story, that trust between the filmmaker and the subjects has to be there. And sometimes, you know, as Morgan can tell you, it takes a really long time to sort of arrive at that place.
So why didn't you make these documentaries for Netflix or HBO or A&E? Why the theatrical release? What was the calculus, the thinking behind that? Amy?
Well, it's really, given that we're sort of new to this, we determined early on that a strategy of putting the films out in the world first would really serve CNN well. And so first our films, if they're accepted, go to film festivals. And then if we can sell them there, we work with theatrical distributors who, again, become our partners to create a theatrical strategy. And we feel that the festivals leading to the theatrical is really a great path to the CNN broadcast, because by that time, there's been word of mouth. People have talked about them. People have reacted to them. Critics have reviewed them. And it's we're the sort of final step of that process. And we have found over the years that that whole journey of the film really brings people to the CNN broadcast. There are millions of people who don't go to see these things in theaters, as well as all these films are doing this summer. We feel that there will still be a great audience for these films once they hit CNN.
So, Ann Thompson, it is a new strategy, not just for these films, but more broadly speaking, these companies, you know, going from festival to theater. Talk about that and this new strategy as we're seeing it now.
Yeah, A&E believes in that, too. And it's the opposite of what Netflix and HBO are doing, which is holding back these things as much as they can for themselves, unless they have to qualify for the Oscar. And I think it's a very successful and effective strategy. And it's a way to have as many different audiences build up interest in something as possible.
Do you see it that way, Morgan Neville?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just say, as a filmmaker, of course, I love the theatrical experience, and there's nothing like having an audience watch your film together and experience that kind of emotional journey. But the other thing about the theatrical release, and Amy was talking about this too, is that it allows the film to seep into the culture in a way that a singular broadcast just doesn't. You know, the fact that we can have conversations like this, that we can have people write op-eds about these films and really have a cultural discussion, that's something that the theatrical experience allows and that I, as a filmmaker, really, really appreciate.
So many calls. Let me get more in here. Ben in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Ben. You're on point.
Hi, Jane. I just wanted to say I saw Won't You Be My Neighbor about a week ago in Savannah, and it was incredibly good. The audience applauded a few different times during the movie, and it was such a good tonic, such good therapy. And I think one of your guests mentioned like the bonding experience. The audience clearly felt good about seeing it together. And I was really unfamiliar with Mr. Rogers in that my daughters were raised by the time his show was airing. And so I was not, it wasn't that familiar with him. But, I mean, he's such an authentic guy who spoke from his heart. And I know a lot of teachers of young kids that I see that in. And like, just to point out one scene where he talked to the boy in the wheelchair.
Yes.
Cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And he had the boy explain cerebral palsy. He had explained his wheelchair. And so it was just such an individual kind of exchange. It wasn't a generic kind of a talk to a child. And then it was so sweet later on in the movie when that boy appeared on stage as an adult.
Yes, I love that, Ben. Thank you for bringing that up, Morgan. It was a real moving, really moving moment. Such authenticity and at the heart of it, just such kindness, you know, such kindness.
Yeah, I mean, something that I think Fred Rogers embodies, but I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg does too, and that I think a lot of these films do, is sincerity. And, you know, these are honest people who believe in what they're doing and are making themselves vulnerable in their beliefs. And I just feel like we live in such a cynical era where our, you know, our politics and our economics, a lot of it can be cynical. And frankly, a lot of our movies are cynical. I mean, even a lot of our superheroes are cynical these days. So when you actually get people who are just the most honest goodness believers who are putting themselves out there in that kind of a way, I think it's just profoundly inspirational.
Amy Antelis, it seems there have traditionally been sort of three categories of documentaries that have been successful. Pop stars, you know, the Michael Jackson, Justin Bieber films, cute animals, think March of the Penguins, you know, Disney nature series, and cultural firebrands, you know, Dinesh D'Souza, Morgan Spurlock, Michael Moore. Do you see a new sort of golden era, a new genre arising here this summer?
Well, I think to Morgan's point, you know, it's a cynical era, and I think some of these movies are capturing, you know, a feeling that it doesn't have to be that way. So I think these movies might not have been so successful in years past, but I think it's sort of a reflection of the culture we're in now. I think when it comes to people like Mr. Rogers and RBG, and we have a film coming out called Love, Gilda, which is about the life and career of Gilda Radner. I think focusing on individuals who are trailblazers, who have inspired people, who have meaning in people's lives, I think just seems to be resonant right now. And I think I would also attribute it to the filmmaking involved. Some of these films are just magnificently made and are really pushing the envelope. So I think as a film experience, they're also finding audiences because they're really beautifully made and sort of at a very, very high level. So I think it's a combination of the art of the film, how they're being made, but also picking subjects that in this particular cultural moment really people need. They want to connect to these people. They feel like it reminds them that they're still good in the world.
Here's a clip from that trailer that you made mention of, Amy, Love, Gilda, about the Saturday Night Live star Gilda Radner. One of the voices you'll hear in this clip is fellow Saturday Night Live alumnus Amy Poehler.
There was so much in the world that had yet to be carved out for women.
The guys weren't saying, hey, let's think of a way to put Gilda in the sketch. But she was always funny.
I suppose being in the thick of it, I don't even realize what strides we were making.
Another beloved figure, Gilda Radner. Amy Antelis, tell us about this one.
Well, this is another trailblazing woman who was the first female comedian hired by Lorne Michaels at Saturday Night Live in 1975. So she, you know, she was doing something that no one had done before her. And she also had a tragic ending where she fought cancer and... but the way she did it, I think, inspires a lot of hope and inspiration in people. So her story makes you laugh and it makes you cry. And the way it's done by a very talented new director, Lisa Dapolito, really creates a film that has Gilda's voice all the way through it. Mm-hmm. Gilda is, in effect, telling her own story. There is a treasure trove of home movies and audio tapes that have never been heard before that Gilda recorded. And modern-day comedians read some of the diaries that she left behind. So I think, again, it's an experience that people will feel good about. I think in spite of her early death, I think that she left an indelible mark on our culture. And people connect to her, are inspired by her. And this film, I think, allows them to sort of experience that emotion that they had watching her way back when.
Let's go to Brian in Montreal, Canada. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. I'll be very brief. I wanted to throw into the mix Canada's contribution to both documentary filmmaking and its diffusion as a way for communities to cultivate new ideas and to cultivate ideas that others will feel strongly about. Very quickly, during World War II, Canada stood alone on North America fighting the Germans, and so we brought over the documentary expert John Grierson, who had been making documentaries in Britain, to make Canada's documentaries all through World War II. The advantage, by tagging a short feature onto an American Hollywood feature, both American and Canadian audiences could get a feel for what the war meant to ordinary people. Mm. And during this Vietnam War, when I was studying with John Grierson, American students who were getting their draft deferment by studying at a Canadian high-tension university got to study with John Grierson and learn how documentary film can make a difference in a time of confusion and conflict. Mm-hmm. Some of those students of John Grierson are still in the mix in America, and one of them, Ron Bloomer, is my favorite documentary in the whole world.
Brian, thank you. Morgan Nivel, you probably know that pioneering Scottish documentary maker that is referred to there, John Grierson.
Of course, yes. And I will say, Canada's always had such a long love and support for documentary filmmaking, more so even than here in America. But the one other thing I should mention, because it's not in the film, and Canadians remind me of this, that Fred's real mentor in children's television was Fred Rogers' mentor was Fred Rainsbury, who was the head of the CBC children's programming and was hugely influential in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood even existing. They put some of the initial funding into it. So thank you, Canada.
Cheryl in Middlebury, Vermont. Hi, Cheryl. Just a little bit of time left, if you could be brief. Welcome.
Yes, thank you so much. I just want to be brief. I want to thank all of you for bringing the documentaries back to the theater. I am one that's always looking for documentaries. I love learning. And I think the reason why it's resonating so much is because of the truth. And I think that's what we're all looking for right now. And you're bringing that. And I want to thank you so much for that.
Cheryl, thank you. Thank you very much. Ann Thompson, some sharper political notes coming in the fall, particularly Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 11/9 that's coming in September. PBS has ordered up a couple of documentaries, Woodstock, the Ken Burns film The Gene, An American History. There's a film called Reconstruction, American After the Civil War. What should we be looking out for upcoming in the documentary film world?
Well, I suspect the Michael Moore will probably hit some of the fall film festivals, so that will be one to look out for. And I'm curious to see if he ignites the kind of reaction that he's had in the past with movies like Sicko and Fahrenheit 9/11. And there's also a series on A&E, a History Channel thing, where there's going to be a Watergate series, which should be very resonant from Charles Ferguson. And I'm curious to see how that turns out.
And Morgan Nivel, your forthcoming movie, tell us about it.
It's a film about Orson Welles and his last unfinished movie, which is now in the process of being finished. He made a movie at the end of his life that he shot over 6 years about a film director at the end of his life that can't finish a movie. And I was lucky enough to get that raw footage and make a film out of it. So it's a little meta, but a lot of fun.
Amy, and tell us, finish us off here. Are there other documentaries you've seen that we should see or forthcoming ones that you're interested in seeing yourself?
Well, I'm really looking forward to Michael Moore. I think, you know, given the political climate we are in, I think seeing what that movie's about and how he lands that story will be probably a documentary to talk about and see this fall. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Well, some incredible movies to see this summer. I thoroughly enjoyed all of them, and it was a pleasure to speak with all of you. Ann Thompson, editor-at-large at IndieWire.com. Ann, thank you so much. Great to have you.
My pleasure.
Morgan Nivel, director of the hit documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor. His forthcoming film about Orson Welles is called They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. We look forward to that one. Morgan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
And Amy Antelis, executive producer of RBG and Three Identical Strangers, and I might add, a wonderful former colleague at ABC News. Amy, great to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Jane.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Have a great weekend. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.